Blog Talk Radio.
Here. This is Ralph Point of What's Happening, Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016. And this is the program that will give you the real news analysis. Our news analysis will cover this evening, what does the current election process teach us about American history and the act of gradual suicide? Under this topic, we will be discussing when liberation struggles are defined as hate groups and hate groups are defined as law and order, then reality has no meaning. To fail to understand that liberation struggle is war is to commit gradual suicide. Some of our co-hosts this evening will be excerpts from the Black Activist Writers Guild, our former political prisoner and Black Panther, Larry Pinkney, the Manhattan Green Party, our beloved brother, Tom Syracuse, and New York City Jericho, our sister, Ann Lamb, and of course, last but not least, our sister, Lynn, the Lynn Stewart Organization, formerly the Lynn Stewart Defense Organization. And right now, without further ado, I'll turn you over to our chairman of the New Liberation Movement, the New Abolitionist Movement, Ralph Pointer, who will read his creed for you this evening.
Hey, brothers and sisters, comrades, people of progress, and all of those who work to make a better world. What I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. And the lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, to begin with, I have a thought that covers this whole topic that we'll be talking about. And the root of all racist policies and thought is the double standard. One standard for us and another standard for those who are perceived and who are indeed the outsiders kept out. And in this context that we have been dealing with from 1619 is the question of color, the outsiders. And the insiders are those with guns, those who use guns in a matter to oppress. And now we are going in the age of guns and power to fight the oppressors. We're not there yet. We have to get there in our minds before the act follows. And I would like to conclude this little segment with a statement. Within and surrounding the most liberal and conservative elements in religion and politics, there is a unified and accepted position that there need be physical resistance to oppression, military, armed struggle. Now, when I talk about the double standard, we have Martin Luther King, but in our election process, we have the two-party system in America, and no one, let me repeat it, no one has talked about reducing America's military budget, which is insane. We talk about social reform, we talk about education, we talk about medical care, we talk about a lot of things, but reducing the military budget is not a part of the discussion. Lynn, I believe, is going to make comments on being a part or not being a part of the discussion not being had, and there are certain things that are never discussed, and that's what we have in the American political system. And we had a discussion today, Lynn Stewart and I, and I says, well, Bernie Sanders certainly cannot be called a socialist, although there's a right-wing thought in America that says if you help the poor, if you suggest that there is a help for the poor, if you suggest that there should be money spent on the middle class, you become a socialist in their minds. And when I say a socialist in their minds, they have learned the term socialism and communism as dirty words. But these same organizations spend money freely for corporations, for Wall Street, and for the military, and for the military-industrial complex, which President Eisenhower, in his last speech to the public, warned the American public against. So this double standard continues, and it is the root of everything. One philosophy for us, another philosophy for them. Black people were never to be considered as a part of these American rights. We hear about inalienable rights, and over the weekend had a discussion that was held up at Yale University about inalienable rights, and everyone who could read, write, or count knows that Helen Keller is 100% right when she says, do not talk about inalienable rights, because the only inalienable rights that are real are those rights you feel that must be had by the people, and you're willing to fight and win those rights, and then and only then are those rights inalienable. And so with that in mind and the other statements that have been made, I'm going to give someone else an opportunity to speak. And I'm going to pass the microphone over to Betty Davis.
Well, thank you, Brother Ralph. And I know that Brother Pinckney, Larry Pinckney, is in the house. I want to acknowledge Sister Lynn, who's in the house, and I see Sister Ann Lamb is in the house. So we're going to turn on all the mics. We also see we have a special guest this evening. The first three digits are 7-3-1, and the last four digits are 12-15. So, again, I want to acknowledge that we have a special guest, and if you wish to speak, we will definitely provide that opportunity for you. But at this time, Brother Larry, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready. Thank you very much, sister. I hope you can hear me. I want to be very succinct. I send you, my sister Betty Davis, my strong love and regards, as well as to Brother Ralph and to, of course, our sister Lynn Stewart. Look, I'm not going to take up any time tonight. I think I'm on tonight. Basically, I want to listen, and that's what I'm going to do this evening is just listen. I want to remind everyone that we have so many political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. It is time for us, if we are human. If we're not, then just say, I'm not human, I'm just a jerk. But if we're human, let's free all of our political prisoners. As we said, all power to the people and the Black Panther Party. And, you know, we got Mumia, we've got Leonard, we've got Robert Seth Hayes, we've got, I mean, God, it's an endless list. It goes on and on and on. So I'm going to shut up right now. I want to thank you for allowing me to be on. I'm just here tonight to listen, all power to the people, free all our political prisoners. Free them all. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for that, Larry. Let us continue. I believe Sister Lynn is on the phone. Lynn, are you there? Hello, Lynn, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me, Ralph?
I can hear you now. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I tell you, things have occurred, or I have looked at my email since we parted, and I tell you, there is the last thing I said as Ralph walked out was, well, I'm going to do a little bit on Albert Woodfox. And indeed I am. The jubilance one felt when Albert walked out of jail with his brother and his lawyers. And then I looked at my email tonight, and my heart dropped like a stone, because my dear Sundiata Okoli, he who was captured along with Joanne Chesimard on the New Jersey Turnpike, the death pipe for all political people, was denied his parole again. It is not as I should not be downhearted because I like to think of myself as a resister, someone who always comes back. And as his lawyer, Bruce Efron, said, it is not a situation. He has 30 days to go back to a full parole board. And if they hear him and they say he should go home, then Sundiata will go home. He had survived the initial court. He had survived the appellate court. And it was only the New Jersey Supreme Court who, of course, live, if we all live in a police state, they live in the SS state of the mall, New Jersey. And the court, of course, follows the state troopers, who are very happy with this decision. Outrageous. But we must keep up our good work on behalf of Sundiata, because he is so deserving and so much one of the political prisoners that we must bring home. All of them we must bring home, as my friend Larry Pinckney said. The other thing that I think people, there's two things I'd like to call to people's attention. I'd like to call to your attention Mumia's call to free Leonard Peltier. He wrote a terrific piece this week about freeing Leonard and how Leonard was told by the Clintons. Yes, that's that lady that's running.
Yeah.
That they would grant his parole or his clemency and then never did. So let's always remember Leonard also. And last but not least, I do want to mention that there is going to be a lot of activity during the first week in March around Afia Siddiqui, she who is voiceless at this point. Her own family has not been able to see her. She has tremendous support in Pakistan. She was captured over there, brought here. Before she got here, she was tortured. Her children were ripped away from her. She was placed in a small room with an American, and they claim she grabbed his rifle and started shooting. However, all of the ballistics were not in accordance with that scenario then. So, but she was convicted. She, too, is at Carswell, along with Ana Belén Montes. So there's just so much to do, and it's so easy to get discouraged and to say, I've had enough. I keep fighting, and I keep losing, and I keep fighting, and I keep losing. And these people are my heart, and we cannot stop fighting. We must not give up. And to maybe raise everybody's spirits, I know it raised mine when I read it tonight, I'm going to do a short bit from Walt Whitman. I would just say parenthetically, this is what is inscribed on my old friend Bill Kunstler's gravesite. It's a statement that starts, "This is what you shall do." And I'm going to read it. "This is what you shall do. Love the earth and sun and the animals. Despise riches. Give alms to everyone who asks. Stand up for the stupid and crazy. Devote your income and labor to others. Hate tyrants. Argue not concerning God. Have patience and indulgence toward the people. Take off your hat to nothing known or unknown." That's Walt Whitman, a lover of words as I am. And what Ralph referred to when he read his credo was, I remarked today, one of the constructions that I just hate, and it's abused by the left as much as the right, the use of the word conversation. Well, that topic is not in the conversation. That topic has not been mentioned in the conversation. And I rankle because there is no conversation. That's the problem. Who's having a conversation? The wealthy industrialists, the corporate magnums, they're having conversations. Oh, yeah, a lot of them. The guys who spend millions on ads, the Koch brothers, they have conversations. But the idea that somehow we're involved as citizens in some kind of conversation with our government, I can't think of anything further from the truth. And with that, with a little rant at the end, after a little Walt Whitman, I'll say goodnight, Ralph.
Well, thank you for that, Lynn. And it is important when we make the statement that the people are committing suicide, the American people are committing suicide, and black people, as the caboose of the train, who need not or who need to fight against this suicide, are going along slowly. You say, not in the conversation, the opportunity, the limited opportunity we have to get in the conversation, we let it pass. And one of the things that we talk about on this program that should be a part of the conversation is our political prisoners who are dying in death camps. And the Puerto Rican organization had said to every Latino running for office, don't think that you can be elected without supporting our political prisoners. That's not the whole story, but that's a major part of the story, of the conversation. They got in the conversation, and I will tell you, they will continue to be in the conversation because they know which buttons to press.
We know that for a long time, the situation in Puerto Rico as a colony has been going on, and the Latino representatives, politicians, have not dealt favorably with the issue. I will not name names. I am not an expert on the issue, but I heard some of the leading lights of the Latino community, the Puerto Rican politicians, had nothing to say about the companies, the corporate, not the corporate, the hedge funds that were ripping off the people of Puerto Rico. And I guess they will decide what's next for that group, for the people in Puerto Rico, for the colony in Puerto Rico. And because of their success with political prisoners, we should pay attention as to how they get in that conversation. And I say again, people of color are committing suicide slowly. We jump on Bernie Sanders' bandwagon, and he says some good things. First thing he says, that the left should have been in front of years ago, but that the politicians and the corrupt American government stymied it by supporting President Obama. And because the Democratic Party supported President Obama, black people and leftists and so-called progressive people did not get in front of the single-payer health care that affects the economy of America, that affects every American. We sat back because some outrageous fascist group, I think they called themselves the Tea Party, were calling Obama a nigger. And I says, I would have thought we got accustomed to that word. And I never heard the word nigger so much since George Wallace used it way back in the 50s and 60s until these young black rap artists used it. I've never heard it so many times. And I'm saying, why are we upset about some fascist group called the Tea Party who calls him whatever it is they want to call him? And it not matters not what they call him, it's what they do and what they think about Obama and anyone of color. But we got involved in that, and we let many issues go right by us because we took our eye off the ball. And I'm talking
Brother
about
Ralph,
that.
Brother Ralph, can I interject for a minute? This is
Surely
what I think. I want to say this to you. You dig it? I want to say it to the entire audience. You dig? No Vietnamese ever called me nigger. You dig it? No Vietnamese ever called us nigger. But we went out there, and what did we do? We killed the Vietnamese in their own country. You dig? It is time for black people, all people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, to wake the freak up, okay? So you mentioned the thing about nigger. It ain't nothing new. Never will be, never has been. And by the way, nigger is not a racial expression. Nigger deals with characteristics. Read Dick Gregory's book called Nigger. All right? But, you know, no Vietnamese called me nigger. But how many of our people went over there and fought and killed the Vietnamese people in their own land, in their own country? And what are we doing today? So, all power to the people. I just have to say that to you, my brother. Sorry for the interjection. Love you, man.
I love the interjection because this is what this is about. When you feel it, as they say, when you see something, say something. When you feel something, say it also. And I'm going to jump to the blind sheikh. Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman said it best when he repeated a part of the philosophy of Islam when he repeated that one level is to feel it in your heart. A bit higher level is to speak out against it. And the highest level is to raise your fist against it. And so as Lynn loves words, as other people love words, love words. I like to hear in my mind the Sheikh speaking on this, and it is very moving. And so, yes, without continuing, without dominating too long here, I will pass the phone on to Betty for her to introduce the next guest. Thank you, Larry.
As usual, we have to give full time to our political prisoner's voice, and Ann Lamb, your mic is open. Ann Lamb, and
yes,
we also want to welcome Brother Tom Syracuse, who just tuned in, and we'll be calling on him shortly. Ann Lamb, take it away.
Hi. Hi, Sister Betty. Hello, Ralph. Lynn, everybody. Reverend Pinckney, so on and so forth. Yes, I was going to talk a little bit about that bad news about Sunday, but since that's already been done, it's very important, you know. I mean, it does show what Ralph was saying. This is a war, you know. Here it is all these years later, and all these FOP types are so happy that he did not get this you know, relief, and the decision was 4-1 against. And to say, yeah, maybe he'll go to a full board and be released, yeah, right. we would hope that would happen, but since we have so many people who have gone to board so many times and been turned down so many times, you know, we still insist and persist and tell people sign those petitions, write those letters. It can make a difference. It will make a difference because we are not going to stop until everybody is home and everybody is free. I mean, I understand, Lynn, you know, what you were saying about sometimes you get disheartened, but we still have to continue to fight on because this is a war. This is a war that started a long, long time ago, right? And it is not over. And it is still a war. And that's our freedom fighters, well-forgotten freedom fighters by most of us, who are some of them actually dying in prison, have sacrificed more than enough. And they have every right to come home. They have not committed any crime because they were defending their community. And defending your community is not a crime. Defending your community from these fascist police who walk around and people with impunity is not a crime. So, you know, we have a whole bunch of people in New York State going to the board, since I work for the New York City Jericho Movement. All the information is at jerichony.org. That's jerichony.org. If you just go there and go scroll down the left side, you'll see support parole for Maliki Shakur Lateen, support parole for my friend Jaleel Muntakim, support parole for my brother Robert Setes, support parole for Herman Bell. He's going up very soon. He's supposed to be going in March. He was originally scheduled for February, has been postponed to the middle of March. Jaleel just got his actual date. That'll be June 14th. This means that the legal teams and the volunteers from the Parole Preparation Project need to get all this like a month before, right? So last minute now for Herman, but you could still email something to Bob Boyle. Everybody else has some time. Maliki is going in April, I believe, so that people should concentrate on getting some letters from Maliki Shakur Lateen. He has his own website. I linked to it from ours because it was easier to just tell people to go to one place. And, you know, really think about it. I mean, it's such a little thing for somebody to do. All these years that they've sacrificed for us, they've sacrificed their whole lives for us. You know, Seth has been in prison since 1973 was when he was convicted, so he was probably in prison and captured before that. He was a young man, right? Now he's an older man, he's got a lot of health problems, and he really would want to come home. He has never asked for anything. The man is, you know, one of these really humble people, like all our political prisoners, and he says, please, I do not want to die in this place, all right? So I think that everybody should make every effort possible to make sure that does not happen. I find it disgusting and sickening how an entire, you know, generation of people are just totally ignored by everybody, you know, not everybody, but, you know, by a large majority of people, right? Have any of these so-called candidates ever said anything about political prisoners? I don't think so.
I believe from my count, Ann, if you don't mind my interrupting,
sure, yeah,
we have 5 in this whole country, all of these people that the political prisoners fought to demand that this country see as humans, as beings worth considering, five of the thousands of elected officials speak of political prisoners, our political prisoners.
Five.
We must change that. We must. You know, I say that over and over again. None but ourselves. And when I say ourselves, I say people of progress. We must not allow our friends and comrades to get involved in the electoral process without our voices being raised. What about our boys?
Absolutely.
What about our girls?
What
no,
about our troops?
Terrible.
Let's bring our troops home.
Our troops. Our people. The people who sacrificed everything for the rest of us. And so, and another thing that you said that rings a bell, that when you talked about we are at war, there was a story in the New York Times, I believe it was last Sunday or two Sundays ago, it all runs together when I read the Times, it's about a televangelist incident. And they interviewed a black woman who was either in South Carolina or North Carolina. Not much difference in either place. That's why I don't particularly remember which one it was. But in front of a packed church, this televangelist was speaking of God and other things. And the reporter asked, and it was a mixed group, black and white people.
Mm-hmm.
And this reporter went to a black woman, and he said, you know, who are you supporting for the election? And we have the Trumpocalypse and the Hillary, and it goes on and on. And her answer was this. We sit side by side and sing religious songs together. Mm. We pray together, but we do not speak about these issues. And these words came out of her mouth. It's like this black woman is at war with white people. They are at war with black people. And I wasn't there. I was only reading the Times. And I think the answer from anyone to this black woman should have been, they are at war with you. They have been at war with you. Religion doesn't matter. Don't you know anything about history? You're still in North or South Carolina. They are at war. When do you answer your call for war? But that wasn't it. The woman answered in a pleading manner. You would think they are at war with us. Wake up, oppressed people. The
yes.
oppressor is always at war with you. Go ahead, Ann. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted, you know, I was picking up on what you had said earlier, because it's very clear it is a war. And, you know, if you talk to somebody like, say, Kuo Dinga, he'll be telling you this is a war that's been going on ever since, you know, African people first arrived, even before African people first arrived on the shores of this continent by force, right, by being kidnapped and taken from their countries. You know, this war has been lasting long, long time. And another thing that I find very disturbing nowadays, very disturbing, right, is that people don't read anymore. Now, you know, like Steve Biko says, what is the most important weapon in the hands of the oppressor? The mind of the oppressed, right? So this is very easy to do if you don't read, because, you know, the TV, as my father said many years ago when he pitched it out the window when I was about 5 years old, was an idiot box, and we were not to have it in our home. Now, I'm very happy he did that, you know, in retrospect. But, you know, so many people, you know, get their news, just regular folk, they get their news from the newspapers, they get their news from a TV news or pseudo news, and there is no real news on these things. So, you know, how are people being informed? So, you know, to really see that the whole thing of reading is no longer, you know, if you even look on the train, you know, like I'm on the train, I always have a book, you know. I have a book, so if the train gets stuck, I don't care. And you look around, and who's reading? A few people are reading. They might have their Kindle. Some of them actually have actual books. Some people have newspapers. But a lot of people are just, you know, they're listening to their music or they're fiddling around with their little devices. You know, it's pretty scary to me. I just watched the other night, it happened to be on Turner Classic Movies, Judgment at Nuremberg. You know, I
yes.
feel like we're living these times again. You know, here we are in a blatantly fascist country, right? And it's getting worse and worse. I mean, look at who's so-called running for president. You know, you're like, excuse me? You know, do you have to be an idiot to apply, apparently? You know, do you have to be a total moron to get pre-selected to, you know, be a candidate? You know, this is really frightening. You know, it's not Donald Trump by himself is not that scary. The fact that so many people listen to him and agree with him and applaud him is scary. That is really frightening, you know, the mindset of people, because people are going more and more and more, just as we watched, you know, and learned in history, the whole rise of Hitler in Germany, I'm seeing the same thing. You know, I'm like, this is the same thing. So people really do need to wake up, as the brother said before, and start paying attention. You know, we have had so many indications that this is coming for a long time. People used to look at me like I had two heads when I said, we are living in a fascist country. They're not looking at me like I have two heads anymore. You know, I'm like, you know,
yes.
I hate people. I've been telling you for a long time, this is coming. You know.
Well, yes, as they talk about the comfort zone and where people, I think Joel said it 2 weeks ago, he explained so clearly why we're not making political progress, where the progressives are being left behind because of our comfort zone. But
uh-huh.
Joel says it best when he says we are involved in our things, and as they take our things, little by little, we do not fight back. We just try to hold on to what little we have left. And I guess, you know, like I've been Scalia'd out, you know, with all of the wonderful terms that were the words that were spoken about Scalia. And as I said before, and I can repeat everything I have said, Scalia is to the Supreme Court as Strom Thurmond was to Congress.
Absolutely.
And they said beautiful words about Strom Thurmond, and they say beautiful words about Scalia, and I say, and our media has been totally controlled by corporate money because the Supreme Court decided it was okay. They are citizens. And I will repeat, when they put one of the corporations in jail, then they will have right for citizenship. But I guess they never wanted to be citizens because those guys don't go to jail. And so, you know, we could talk about that all evening, too.
Oh,
but I think much has been said about that. And so I will let you finish and continue with what you had to say there.
All right. Well, I didn't want to get too much
before,
off.
And before
yes.
you finish.
Yes.
This is Larry. I just want to say something very quick, my sister. You know, it is. You are absolutely correct with respect to the Trumpet or the Trumper or the Trump or whatever name you want to call him.
Whatever you want to call that guy.
Yeah.
If he's even human, we have questions about that too.
So you're right. I want to say this though. I want to say that let us remember that Hillary the Butcher Clinton. Okay. Let us remember that we really, this is not a choice. It's not a choice at all.
No, it's not.
and you know, Hillary the Butcher Clinton, you remember what she said? We came, we saw,
we
conquered. He died. Okay? right? We came, we saw, he died. And who was she talking about? She was talking about the then legitimate, whether you like him or not, the legitimate head of state of a North African country of
yes.
Libya. Muammar Gaddafi, who was tortured, who was sodomized,
mm-hmm.
and who was subsequently murdered, tortured, sodomized, and murdered. Now this, and that's our choice?
I know.
Between Trump and that piece of manure? So I just wanted to throw that in there, And I have a lot more to say, but I won't say it. I want to just give it on back to you. But I just want to say that, sister,
thank you so much. I agree with you completely.
Well, I'm done. I just had to throw that in.
One of the worst things in my imagination is this damn billowy thing, once again, being in the seats of power. And, you know, what's really amazing to me is, you know, just like, you know, reading the papers and looking at the pseudo-news, is, oh, well, she has a big lead in the black community here and the black community there and the black community here. And I'm like, well, what is wrong with the black community? When her husband was in office, he did
nothing
for the black community.
We've been working on that
community.
Long time. I was just talking with Lynn Stewart this afternoon, and she was talking about a famous black woman. And I'm trying to remember her name. And if you're there, Lynn, kick in and give me a hand there.
Pauline Marshall.
Yes, you got it. And she was way ahead of her time. Lynn, give us a little background on Pauline Marshall. I love that, and I love her story. Go ahead, Lynn.
She was a woman from the South. She wrote to FDR and said, you have this left-wing plan, but what's in it for the Negro people? And that letter got sent to Eleanor Roosevelt, who was so taken with it, that she wrote back, and she and Pauline Marshall became very good friends. Pauline also was, we would call her transgender today.
Mm.
She was definitely a woman caught in a man caught in a woman's body, and she begged for hormones from doctors who would never give them to her. She lived during the 50s and the 40s, and there's recently been a biography written about her that was reviewed in the Times, which is how I happened to come upon her. And I do remember old friends from back in the 60s, mostly black women, talking about Pauline Marshall. And the other interesting little factoid was she asked to get into the University of North Carolina. She had once said to FDR, why are you talking to all those white people, which was an all-white school at that time.
Right.
And when she didn't get in, she went to Thurgood Marshall, and he said, well, we have to pick our cases very carefully. We can't represent you.
Mm.
She went on to get 3 law degrees at other schools.
Wow.
She was quite a remarkable woman. Another name forgotten, I guess, Black History Month. I don't know, I always think of the Boondocks joke or else the one about History Month.
Yes.
It's Black History 20 Minutes now.
Right.
But I'll throw that in. Pauline Marshall, a name people might be interested in a book about. Certainly people who are in the transgender fight should also read.
Oh, yeah.
And anyone who's interested in folks and how they survive, because she said if a black woman makes it through, she can say one thing. I survived.
Yeah.
So that's Pauline Marshall.
Thank you for that, Lynn, because, you know, that's the one statement that I, you know, like that sticks with me. You know, what do you think about your life and existence? And she was an accomplished, brilliant person of color, a female, and she said, I survived. And this is the best we can say for the most of us, but we have to do better, that surviving does not do it for the rest of us. And
nope.
I believe there's a kernel of something in all of us who want to see progressive change that is the reason why we do what we do, the reason why we fight the way we fight. For me, it's just a thought, an image of a child. In America, what are we going to do for that child? And then you extend that to the children around the world. We can't just sit. Survival is very important because you have to survive to fight.
That's right.
We must all think. of that final emotional position that we get to, I'm going to fight. And I was telling Lynn, and I said, you know, after having involved thousands of people in the fight to free Lynn Stewart, you know, we were up at 80,000 with all of the people, the progressive people from around the world, and the government said no on that hot summer day, and I was in Washington, and Lynn says, well, get back to the city and make some statements before returning to Washington. Go to where the media is, and I'm going to throw one in here for BAI. We cannot let BAI fail. It is a necessary element in our struggle.
Yes.
But as I was driving back in this wreck of a car I had with no air condition on this terrible hot day, I got a phone call from Lynn in the prison, and she says, pull over, I'm going to tell you what to say. And when I pulled over, I said, she is in jail. She is still fighting. What do I have to be sad about? And I can say that for all our political prisoners.
Absolutely.
They are in jail. They are leading us, and we must not let them down. And with that, I'm going to turn the phone back over to Betty and continue this. And
could I say just one more thing? I know we're short for time, but when you were talking
certainly
about the children and all that, that goes back to the whole Native American viewpoint of when we think about what we're doing. Think about what it means for the future, for seven generations, right, in the future, what your action, you know, what effect your action will have. And that's very important. And also very important is the fact that our political prisoners are some of the strongest people you would ever meet in your life. You know, I've not sat in prison for 45 years. I have sat in prison, but not for anything like that. And I don't know if I would be that strong. You know, they're really amazing, amazing people. You know, despite all that the government throws at them, which is constant, you know, daily harassment, provocations, you know, trying to sell you up with somebody who, you know, is going to make
well,
you,
and let me
you know,
say this. They have proved their strength by being the activists that they were. And with
and
that, I'm going to have to pass it back to Betty for the next speaker.
Okay,
before we
so
go
much,
on
Ralph.
To Tom Syracuse, who's in the House, and we've been discussing the elections and how absurd Hillary is and how absurd the Trump lockupus is, I want to just give you the words Albert Woodfox on Democracy Now! One of the things he said is, you know, when we first were put in the prison in 1972, myself, Herman Wallace, and Robert King, we knew that if we had any chance of maintaining our sanity, and, you know, not allowing the prison system to break us, that we had to keep our focus on society and not become institutionalized, where we were only concerned about things going on in the prison. And I think this applies to us who are in the minimum security prison.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be focused on society. We can't let them make us fight over how many linens on the head of a pen or any other absurdity that they throw at us, like somebody calling a super millionaire like Obama a nigger. That's not the issue. The issue is the next and the generation after that. And without further ado, I want to bring on Tom Syracuse. You know, he is a major fighter against the nuclear plants upstate New York. He's a major fighter for political prisoners. He was one of the main ones that was fighting for Troy Davis in New York City and keeping that name alive right up until the last minute. And most of all, he's a fighter for affordable housing for the working class. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am, and thank you very much for saying those things. You know, I never knew about Albert Woodfox. I became aware of this the other day when Amy Goodman devoted her whole program to this miraculous man who spent 45 years in the Mississippi State Prison, ironically called Angola.
Louisiana.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Louisiana State Prison. Ironically called Angola, where many, many people were captured and enslaved here in the United States. Now, here is a man whose conviction was overturned by several judges, and the governor of Louisiana and the prison board that makes these decisions ignored these judges.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, when he got out and was interviewed, I was absolutely amazed. In fact, it was just emotional for me,
mm-hmm,
to see this person who survived, but as Ralph said, not only survived, he has come out, he has maintained his humanity. He has maintained his manhood, despite what happened to him. So, it is not enough to complain about these things. We have to put these corrupt, vicious politicians' feet to the fire. This governor should be brought up on criminal charges for ignoring these judges' orders to release Albert. We should make it clear that we will support no candidate that is not for the complete abolition
Well, the abolition of prisons would be good.
Huh?
The abolition of prisons would be good.
No. Yeah, the abolition of prisons.
Well,
no.
Said,
confinement. Solitary confinement. There should be no solitary confinement is nothing more than torture.
Absolutely.
And we should demand that anybody that runs for office should come out squarely against solitary confinement. And we should also demand that that these prisons have to be totally overhauled, that they have to come under the control of the people, not what's happening now, coming under the control of for-profit companies. We're not making any demands of these so-called politicians. The same thing with what do you do when law enforcement officers break the law, when they use excessive force that results in death. We have to demand that a special prosecutor, an independent prosecutor, be set up, not appointed by these politicians, but elected by the people. In fact, we have to start to democratizing this government. It was never a democracy, and it's not a democracy now. We have to give power to the people to elect special prosecutors to run the prison system. I don't like that word, prison. To run our public schools. That's what we have to demand.
Let me just say this all power to the people. You said something. You said something, my brother, and you are absolutely correct. You did. You said return it. tickets all piled to the people. You said that. That's what
yes.
you said, Joe. And you were absolutely unequivocally correct. Absolutely unequivocally. The bottom line, as you made crystal clear, is that this power must be returned to the people. And the only way it's going to be returned is that we take it back. And whether we're talking about Albert Woodbox, Herman Wallace, you know, brother Robert King Wilkinson, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Leonard Peltier, Robert L. Hayes, oh my God, the list is endless. The bottom line is, if we had prison that was returned to the people, guess what? We'd have very few prisons, because the people would instruct their own justice. I'm sorry, but I have to
well,
say, you made me so excited, brother. Thank you so much for that.
But I wouldn't use the word return, because the people never had that power in this country. They never ran anything. They were represented by a clique of politicians that did the bidding of a small, wealthy elite. So there was never any community control over the police department, over the schools, over the prisons, or over anything else. That's what we have to fight for.
But Joe, when I say return, brother, I'm not talking about return to the system, returning to history. I'm talking about returning back to the people. And
right.
the people, that's what this is about.
Right.
I'm not talking about the returning to the system. Let's get real. So anyway, I'm in agreement. I'm in full agreement with
you,
brother. Thank you.
Okay, that is great. Tom, would you finish? And we have some voices we would like to hear.
Yes, I'm finished.
You're finished?
I'll end it on that phrase again. Power to the people.
Woo!
Sure
you're right.
That's it.
Sure you're right.
Okay, thank you. Betty?
All right, 731, first three digits, 731, 1215, your mic is open. If you want to give us a greeting and get off quick, you can. If you'd like to introduce and say something in 2 minutes, you can. Hello? Hello? 731. Okay, we're going to assume that 731 1215 is just listening in this evening, and we're going to say you're always welcome. Brother Ralph, it's your mic.
Yes, thank you for that. It's been a wonderful evening, and we must remember all of the things when we talk about Angola. One of the interesting things in black lives, everyone black in America knows about something about Angola. It is nothing but a death camp that was developed out of a plantation, and slavery is alive and well in Louisiana. And we must remember that. And you cannot talk about America. Every issue you talk about America becomes overwhelming. And these thoughts of the overwhelming need for change can lead us to one conclusion. We must take it all back. We must take this so-called democracy that is a slaveocracy in every word and have our government of the people, for the people, and fought by the people.
All right, I just want to remind you once again, March 5th is the International Working Women's March up in Harlem. It will start at 122nd Street and Frederick Douglass Boulevard, where the statue of Harriet Tubman appropriately stands. That's on March the 5th, Saturday, starting at 12:30. Also, March 11th, at 4 p.m., the New York City Federal Building and Broadway, Lower Manhattan, we will stand and rally for Afia Sadiq. With that, we want to say thank you. We want to encourage you to call in your topics or send it to us ahead of time at ralphpointerwhatshappening@gmail.com. Thank you once again for your contribution. And I would like to say to our co-host, stay strong.
Thanks again, brothers and sisters. See you next week.
Say them clear for the whole.